Hey everybody, my name is Nick. Welcome to the Profoundly Pointless Podcast. I want to thank you so much for listening. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share, all those kind of things. I want to start off the show with an announcement. We have moved our podcast hosting site. We switched over to a new one. We're now on Podbean. If you're listening to this, it basically means absolutely nothing. So there's really no reason for me to mention it, other than the fact that for some reason I feel like I should mention it. Moving on from that, I think this is going to be our best show so far because we've got a really interesting guest. His name is Levi Schinkel, and he's a dinosaur hunter. He's with the Wyoming Dinosaur Center, and he's literally the guy that goes out when they find dinosaur bones. He digs them up. He catalogs them. He puts the skeletons together, all those kind of things. And I was just really fascinated about how that process actually works. And not only do I think the conversation with him is really something to hear, but it leads into the conversation that we then had with John Shull. I'm always a big believer in the idea that after about 2 years, you've pretty much heard everything that somebody has to say. You can pretty much tell what they're going to say in any given situation until they say something completely new. And there was something that John said in our conversation that just made me go, what? What? And I'm not trying to make fun of my boy, but I was definitely surprised to hear him say this. So you got to hear what he has to say. Let's get right into, though, our first interview. This is Levi Schinkel with the Wyoming Dinosaur Center. Were you really into dinosaurs as a kid, or how did you get started in
this? As long as I can remember, dinosaurs have been, like, the thing. You know, I'm sure I could say some of the more complicated names before I could say my own name, it seems.
What was it about them?
Size, teeth, you know, you don't see them every day. Something about them being, you know, not being on Earth anymore that's really, has always been of an amazement to me.
I mean, I think a lot of kids are necessarily, they're usually pretty interested in dinosaurs. And I don't mean this in a bad way. How come you didn't, what was it about it that you didn't necessarily, quote unquote, like, grow out of it?
You know, honestly, I don't know. I started where I'm at. Out of high school, like I was in a work placement class in my high school, and I still work with dinosaurs. So like I started at this museum that I'm at now right out of high school, and that kind of re-sparked the interest. So it kind of died down in the high school years, but having the hands-on experience of actually working with dinosaurs day in and day out has really brought back the passion. And I'm in charge of all the bones once they come out of our preparations lab. I make sure they're cataloged, photographed, and properly stored. So when we want to put one on display or a researcher comes, they should, you know, I should be able to just take them right to where they want to be and show them what they want to see.
When you're touching one of these bones, to me that just sounds, this thing, I mean, they have to be huge, right?
Some of them can be. We dig up a lot of sauropods in our quarries, and those are the big long neck guys. And some of their bones, like their leg bones, like their upper leg bone, the femur, that can weigh in excess of 350 pounds by itself.
How do you move them?
Lots of people and lots of back injuries.
Are they delicate or are they still pretty solid?
A little bit of both. It depends on how they were fossilized. Sometimes the mineral content isn't as much in some, so they're a lot more fragile. They're a lot more brittle. There's some bones that have lots of thin processes. So those are more fragile than like leg bones. Those are just solid chunks of bone, big round cylinders. And those are a lot more hardy than, say, like a skull bone or parts of like the vertebrae.
To me, if I was to pick up one of these things, I would just be in awe of the sense that this is 100 million or however many million years old, and this was a real thing.
You know, that was me every day first starting out here the first couple of years. But now, you know, as crazy as it seems, it sounds, it's par for the course now. You know, I see these on a daily basis. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a dinosaur bone. Cool.
But that first experience with it, what was that like?
It's surreal, you know. Like when we're digging them up, you're seeing, when you uncover a bone in the field, you're seeing that bone for the first time in 140 million years. You're going to be the first human to ever lay eyes on it. And that's something else.
I feel like it's such a span of time that it's hard for us to grasp if it's even real.
People don't grasp time well at all. Like to you and I, 100 years is a really long time. But in the history of the Earth, it's a drop in the bucket.
So how does that work? I mean, you guys actively are out there looking for them? Somebody stumbles upon them?
that's basically how they're found. We've been digging the quarries that we're at from over 20 years now. And they were first discovered by a European amateur paleontologist. He was actually a veterinarian by trade, but he was really into fossils. So what they do is they come out to a place like Wyoming, and they look for a certain type of rock, which in our case is the Morrison Formation. So you find that rock, and then you walk along it until you see something sticking out of the ground. And you start digging it, and you just hope that there's more.
How often will you guys find an intact skeleton? Or do you just find it bits and pieces?
Hardly ever. Jurassic Park has really made the science of paleontology sexier than it is. We find lots of individual elements. We have a few of our quarries are bone beds, so there's multiple individuals in one spot. And it's up to our paleontologists to be able to discern, you know, this leg goes with this animal, this arm goes with this one. One of our quarries alone has produced some 2,000 bones from at least three different individuals.
That's crazy. How can you tell the difference between, like, say, dinosaur Fred and dinosaur Tom?
Best guess, usually size is a good indicator.
Even within the same species, you'll be able to kind of just.
Oh yeah, like you know, your bones and my bones are going to be different because we're different ages. You know, we have different diets, so there's all sorts of indicators, you know, that make the bones different, and we can look at these and say, you know, this one's slightly smaller than this one, so it probably doesn't go with this one. So we put it as a, you know, that's a new specimen, a new animal.
If somebody finds one, like, how long of a process are we talking to get it up, get it into the museum, all that?
The easy part is digging them up. Once they come down into our preparations lab, for every hour that we're in the field digging it out of the ground, somebody's going to be in our lab preparing the bone for another six.
Why is that?
It's far more tedious. They're cleaning off every as much rock as they can get off, and we're using little handheld pneumatic jackhammers to clean those off. Most of the time, we start with toothbrush and water. We try to do the least invasive way first, and then work our way up to the more mechanical and harder on the bone.
Have you ever broken one on accident, or like, oh man, I really just messed this up?
I found my first bone with a pickaxe. We've got really good glues. Breaks happen all the time.
What is it about Wyoming?
You know, that's a good question. I honestly don't have an answer for that. It's just luck of the draw. One thing for, like, where we're at, we have a very hard sandstone on top of all of our dinosaur, like, layers, and that helps to keep the dinosaur layers from eroding away.
Are people generally surprised every time they find one of these? I mean, 140 million years is a long time. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, to see their eyes light up when they see something, you know, when they uncover something for the first time, that never gets old.
I think most people probably, when they think of dinosaurs, they could maybe name, let's say, 5 to 10 different ones. Do you guys mainly find those kind of dinosaurs, or do you find ones that maybe people have never heard of?
We find some of the big names. We find things like Apatosaurus, Diplodocus, Allosaurus. Stegosaurs should be in the area. We just haven't found any yet.
Because the dinosaurs were essentially alive for, I mean, it's not like all of them were alive at the same time, right?
No, we're talking a span of, you know, 200 million years from the start to the end.
Are most dinosaurs generally very large, or are there some that are like our size and smaller?
There's some that range down to the size of a chicken. You've seen Jurassic Park?
Yes.
The Velociraptor in Jurassic Park that's a fictional dinosaur. The real Jurassic Park, or the real Velociraptor, is roughly the size of a turkey.
Is it really?
It is. It's super underwhelming. My best guess is Steven Spielberg looked at that and he's like, there's no way that's going to make me $100 million. So they made it bigger and scarier.
But were they pretty dangerous animals? I mean, or were they?
I definitely wouldn't. I wouldn't want to meet one in a well-lit alley.
What goes through your head in this certain sense when some people are like, dinosaurs weren't real?
Usually an audible sigh and an eye roll.
I mean, how often do you hear that?
We have people that come in solely for that purpose, and we're as respectful as we can be in presenting the science as it is. Whether or not they accept that, that's completely up to them.
What do they generally, I mean, do you feel like you can ever change somebody's mind, or are they like, nope, I don't believe it, I don't care what you show me?
Little column A, little column B. You know, there's some that come in with an open mind, and there are some that come in that just want to fight. So
Last question on that, on this kind of topic, in the sense that they're like, what did they say when you show them? Like, no, this is a bone. Like, this is real. Touch it.
Most of them will argue about the ages more than anything. They'll believe it's real, but they'll believe that it's not as old as it is.
Like it was around 200 years ago or something?
Something like that.
That would be a little bit difficult. Now, how did the photography stuff? Were you a photographer before you started taking the pictures, or vice versa?
Photography just kind of started as a hobby. I traded some DVDs to a friend for a small camera, and that kind of blossomed into a hobby that pays me every now and then. I do photography outside of work as well, so.
Do you remember what the DVDs were?
It was the Chappelle Show Season 1.
Dang.
It was tough to part ways with those, but I'm glad I did.
Just that one DVD for a camera?
Yeah, it was just a little point and shoot, just a little handheld one.
Do you ever regret not having the Chappelle Show Season 1?
No, not one bit. If you're into dinosaurs, definitely check it out. I mean, it's a very specialized field, but it's been a lot of fun from day one.
When you see like a dinosaur exhibit or something like that, is that generally the real bones, or is that a casting of what the real bones look like?
Sometimes you have both of them in a museum. Like our museum, we have both. So like since we don't have T-Rexes in our area, we have a cast T-Rex from South Dakota. We have one in our museum called Supersaurus, where the animal that's mounted is a cast. Because the real bones are so heavy and so big, all you would see is like a metal armature.
Yeah, because obviously you can't get a brontosaurus into a building. How does that work in terms of, are these things pretty valuable? I mean, do people ever sell them on the private market?
Unfortunately, they do. Private fossil sales aren't good for academic purposes. There's no guarantee that researchers will have access to that. And, you know, if you were to come in with a fossil and ask us the value of it, we're going to tell you that scientifically there is no value. It's priceless.
How much stuff can you guys really learn from the bones itself?
It's endless, honestly. I mean, you can do range of motion things, so you're learning speeds, and you can, you know, they're using methods to you know, decipher like strength, jaw strength, bite power, and more than just the bones fossilized. Sometimes you'll find soft tissues and things like that, and that just leads to a more complete picture of the animal.
They generally don't look like what we think that most people would think they look like, do they?
Paleontology is always changing. Dinosaurs are always changing from the old tail on the ground dragging to these much more, you know, nimbler giant dinosaurs. You know, these guys are 20 feet tall, but they're very nimble. And that wasn't the case 50 years ago. You know, we thought they were all dragging their tails on the ground, cold-blooded monsters. And they're much more active than that. They're much more spry than what we used to believe.
Were most of them generally really big, or were most of it just kind of ran the gamut?
It's like it is today. You know, you have just as many that are big and just as many that are small, you know, ranging from, you know, like elephants and giraffes to, you know, cats and shrews.
If they were still here, do you think we would be?
That's a good question. I mean, some of them were rather intelligent, so that, you know, there's a very good chance that it would have been quite a fight. But, you know, we have thumbs. You know, that's a big thing. Reminds me of a quote from Neil Tyson. You know, the reason that dinosaurs went extinct is because they didn't have a space program and they didn't have thumbs.
It's amazing what that one little digit has allowed us to accomplish.
You try to imagine life without a thumb and it's, you know, you're not getting very far.
What is the best dinosaur movie?
Easily it's the first Jurassic Park, in my opinion. I mean, that's the quintessential dinosaur movie.
Can you watch it now? And enjoy it, or are you like, that's not real, that's not true, that's not...
I've compromised with myself. I recognize it as a monster movie at this point.
Any opinions on The Land Before Time?
It's sadder than it needs to be.
Yeah, it really is. Do you guys have any sense if they could communicate with each other?
Oh, I'm sure they could, just like, you know, like animals today can. You know, it's not something that we can understand.
Somehow, basically like animals today can communicate.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just, they're not asking each other about dinner or something like that.
No, but they're telling you there's danger over there. Hey, you know, there's some food over here. They were able to do that, I'm sure.
So now, do you do a lot of nature photography as well? I mean, I saw some of your stuff, but I didn't want to go full online stalker.
Yeah, I prefer like landscapes and wildlife, things like that. You know, I don't need to tell a mountain how to pose. It's doing a good job on its own.
Okay, we'll hear more from Levi later on in the show when we go over top five dinosaurs. Now let's give John a call, though. And a pattern that I've noticed recently with him is that he's really motivated about the podcast for like a day or two. Comes out on Wednesday, he's usually all pumped up on Wednesday, he's got ideas on Thursday, and then there's just nothing. When it comes down to actually then doing the next one, it's hard to get him to focus. So we're going to give him a call right now and see if we can get an explanation of exactly why that is. Probably not, but we're going to give it a shot.
Hey, this is John. Leave me a message and I will get back to you when I can.
Do you think that do you guys think that he recorded that in his car? Because there's obviously a very loud sound at the beginning of it that's unclear what that is. Also, how did he have an audible in the middle of his own voicemail message when all he said was, "Hey, this is John, leave me a message"? How did that one sentence throw him off enough that he had to pause? Listen, so we just heard your voicemail message and we've got some questions about your voicemail.
The one time I missed the phone call, and all right, fine. What are the questions?
Number one, did you record it in your car?
Yes.
Number two, there is a very long and audible in the middle of it when the voice message is actually only, "Hey, this is John, leave me a message." Why did you, get nervous and you didn't know what to do, or what happened? Because it sounds like you dropped the ball.
You know, I haven't even listened to it in many years. I'm not even entirely sure that I remember what you're speaking of, but I was probably trying to extend the voicemail and then just had nothing else to say, so then I just wrapped it up.
Do you feel like, I don't think people should even leave voicemails anymore, except for your boss or your mother.
I mean, who listens to them is my question. Like, do you listen to yours?
No.
I am more likely to respond to a text than ever respond to somebody who called me and left a voicemail only.
What is the appropriate amount of time that goes in between if you call someone and they don't answer, and then you text them? How much time does that other person have to wait before it's obviously they're ducking your phone calls but will text you back?
I believe this has like a term. I don't know what the term is, but I'm sure it's on Urban Dictionary. But I'm notorious for this, to where someone will call me and I will not answer the phone call, but then I will text you back like 10 minutes later saying, "Hey, sorry I missed your phone call. What's up?"
If you say that, if anybody says that, the chances that they are lying, do you think that they're anything less than 99%?
No, most definitely not. It's like, to be honest, it's like, "Yeah, I saw you calling. I didn't really want to answer the phone for whatever reason, so I'll give it like the courtesy 10 minutes, and then I'll pretend like I may have been actually doing something. And then I'll get a hold of you, hoping that you text me back instead of calling me."
Why do you always say, "to be honest"? I don't understand that.
I don't know that either. That's something my wife has asked me and questioned me about since our first date.
Because it's not, you're implying that you were essentially lying to us the entire time before that.
Well, I'm always lying to you, so I guess I'm lying to everybody. I don't know why I say "to be honest." To be honest.
What an idiot. I think a lot of people say stuff to essentially fill in the gaps so that there's no quiet time. Like, they're buying themselves time to say the next thing that they haven't thought of yet.
I had a lot of feedback this week from people I know and some that I don't know about our PSL discussion.
Pumpkin spice latte, for those not in the business.
Every place that I've been to has a pumpkin spice something. Whether it's from like a pumpkin spice sundae to a pumpkin spice, I don't know, shake. Every place is doing something, and they don't call it pumpkin spice. It's PSL, and it pisses me off every time.
No, it's completely inappropriate. The abbreviation of it is what makes it ridiculous.
And it has to be the most absurd, you know, acronym, you know, PSL for pumpkin spice latte.
It's ridiculous.
What about my pumpkin foot up your ass? What's that?
It's an issue that I think that we as a society need to really address. The over-abbreviation of everything has become ridiculous.
Everything has an abbreviation.
Well, I'm a big fan of some of them, like Gunkle. I've always found Gunkle to be very humorous.
What the fuck is Gunkle?
Gay uncle. Let's move on right now. Did you like dinosaurs as a kid?
Of course. I'm going to say, what boy didn't like dinosaurs as a kid?
Yeah, I think pretty much everybody had some sort of dinosaur-themed shirt as a child.
Secondly, I'm about to blow the lid off this whole conversation, and I'm going to ask you the $1,000 question.
Okay.
Do you believe that dinosaurs were real?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Do you not?
I'm skeptical. I am very skeptical that they actually existed.
How are you possibly skeptical about this?
Yeah, I'm probably going to sound real ignorant.
Yeah. Let's hear this.
Pretty ignorant. I'm going to just throw that out there before I get hated on by everyone, you know, all three people that listen to this. However, for there being millions and millions of dinosaurs that we think roamed the world at one time, how many actual skeletons have been found and erected?
See, but okay, I can understand that thought process. Like, well, we haven't found that many skeletons. But then you have to think, this was 140 million years ago, 65 million years ago at the earliest. How many things do you know that have been around for 65 million years?
And I get that. And I'm not trying to start a conspiracy theory here. That's not what I want to do with this conversation. But I'm saying that long ago, like, how was there even history from that long ago? Like, how was there recorded history? What, like, caveman's drawing, like, big dogs on a wall, and we're going to say that's a dinosaur?
I feel like you need to read more books.
Well, I probably need to read the right kind of books instead of Hustler and Playboy, but that's another conversation for another time.
But those things weren't, like, 65 million years ago is a long time ago. Like, humans weren't even around, I don't think, in any kind of form or anything like that until millions of years later.
Exactly my point. So how is there any recorded history that these big-ass airplane-type animals walk the earth?
Well, they found their bones.
How do we even know that that's real?
Do you know who we talked to on this episode of the podcast?
Of course not, because you never give me a heads up whatsoever.
We literally talked to the guy who goes out and digs up the dinosaur bones and puts them together.
See, first off, that's a badass guess. That's a good get.
Secondly, do you know how dumb that guy currently thinks that you are?
That's absolutely fine. I wish I could have a conversation with, what's his name, Brett?
Levi,
sure. Sure, it's really Levi. We're going to start calling him Jeff Goldblum. How about that?
Jeff Goldblum, one of the most underrated actors of his generation.
I can't agree with you on that.
Did you or did you not have a cardboard cutout of Jeff Goldblum?
No, I never had a cardboard cutout of Jeff Goldblum, ever, nor would I ever.
That is not what your wife told me.
She told you I had a cardboard cutout of Jeff Goldblum?
Or something along those lines, like a big poster or something.
Well, that definitely caught me off guard. Yep. Okay.
Are you denying it?
No, I am denying it, but I have picked up some things while I've been inebriated along the way. Maybe that was one of them. I don't really remember nor know.
So you may have had a cardboard cutout of Jeff Goldblum.
Maybe at one point. I just want to go back on this for one second, because this is going to make me sound even more stupid.
I'm a big fan of letting people dig their own graves.
Jurassic Park, right? The best dinosaur movie ever made, right? Can we agree on that?
Yeah, well, are you going original dinosaur movie? The original Jurassic Park?
Yeah, 1993.
Whoa, throwing out dates.
Well, no, so why I bring that up is, so I talk all this about dinosaurs possibly not being real, you know, I'm a questioner, blah, blah, blah. However, that was the first movie I had ever seen in theaters, and I loved it so much. I'm pretty sure, I could be off on the number, but I'm pretty sure I seen that movie in theaters as a little kid at least 7 times.
but yet you didn't believe the dinosaurs were real.
I mean, of course I did growing up, but now that I'm older, and you know, and you do some more of your own research, and you look into things on your own, you're not swayed by, you know, T-Rexes and gigantic CGI creatures, you know. I'm not saying they weren't real. I am not saying that, but I do question the authenticity of everything. I mean, like I said, how many complete bones? I understand they're millions and millions and millions of years old. But if you can find one, don't you think there'd be plenty more?
Well, yeah, but they find them. It's just hard. I mean, you have to look at it. Look at it from this perspective. When you see mountains around you, the dinosaurs are older than those mountains.
Which, but I mean, says who? Says who?
Science.
Well, I guess that's where we have to draw a line. Who knows how old the dinosaurs actually were?
Well, they can carbon date them.
Okay, I go back to how many actual fossils have been found and put together to prove that a Brontosaurus was 80 feet tall.
Well, I mean, here's my thing about this. What kind of, okay, so let's say they found 1,000. Would you say that's not enough? If you say that's not enough, then how many do they need? 5,000? 10,000?
Maybe I should reword my ignorant comment.
Please do. Let's hear this.
Maybe it's not that they never existed. However, maybe it's the capacity at which society has made all of us think of dinosaurs and how they looked and how big they were. I mean, maybe the T-Rex really wasn't 30 feet tall. Maybe it was just like a fucking miniature horse with gigantic teeth.
Well, okay, so I get the point that you're making. Like, what did it really actually look like is probably something that's harder to determine just from the bones alone. But I don't think that somebody could say, no, you know what? It turns out the T-Rex was 28 feet tall, and they've been telling us it was 30 feet tall, so they're completely wrong.
I mean, once again, I think we're going to keep going around and around on this. I think you're right. I think everyone out there who questions history is right. I mean, the problem is we'll never know. You know, we'll never know any of this. I don't care how many fossils you find. Okay, well, then what we need to do, you and I, is
road trip to Wyoming?
Yeah, get some GoPros on our heads, go out to Wyoming and go on a dinosaur hunt.
I think that's a great idea. I feel like, though, if you would have talked to him, the conversation would have basically went like this. Hey, Levi, my name is John Shull. I don't think the dinosaurs really existed. And he would have said, no, you're completely wrong.
And then I would have threw my beer at him, and then he would have threw his back at me, and it would have just gotten ugly.
Yeah. And I would have filmed it. I would have watched. Okay, so let's put aside the fact that you're questioning of dinosaurs. Can you do your top five dinosaurs?
So this one was a toughie for me. I got to be honest with you. I realized I did not know that many dinosaurs, and I know I'm going to need your help on their names because I still couldn't find any of the ones really that I was thinking of.
Do you not have internet?
I do, but I type in like dinosaur type fish and it brings up nothing that I was thinking of.
It's a problem.
It is a problem. Apparently, I'm just failing at every aspect in my life.
Look, I'm going to have to say it's not going well. To be honest with you, I'm going to have to say that.
Fuck you.
You got to just find, reach out when this conversation ends, just find the nearest book and start reading it. It doesn't matter. Pamphlet, whatever it is, just start reading it. Okay, go with your number one. No, wait. We're going. This is the one we do 5-1. This is the in order. What's your number five?
Number five, Megalodon. I can't even say it.
Number one, that's not a dinosaur, that's a shark.
I can't even say it right.
It's not a dinosaur, it's a shark if you're trying to say Megalodon.
Yeah, a megalodon.
I think that's a shark, technically, and not a dinosaur.
It's a prehistoric animal. Doesn't that classify as a dinosaur?
No, I mean, sharks have been around for a long time. I'm pretty sure it's a shark and not a dinosaur.
But I understand that it's a shark, but it's from that period. Doesn't that classify as a dinosaur?
No, I don't think so. I don't know why, but I'm pretty sure, I don't think it does. It's just a shark. Like, a dinosaur is a dinosaur, and a shark is a shark.
You know, like they said in Happy Gilmore, green jacket, blue jacket, who gives a shit?
That may have been the best joke you've ever had in your life.
All right, what's your number five?
Brontosaurus. Can't go wrong with a Brontosaurus.
Yeah, they're just big and dumb. I know how that is. Speaking of big and dumb, my number four. Speaking of, my number four is a Triceratops.
Ooh, I had that at number three. My number four was the Stegosaurus, which is the one with, like, the spiky tail, I believe. And my number three was...
That was my number three.
Really? So we got them basically reversed.
Yeah, we flip-flopped them.
Yeah. Okay. What's your number two, then?
I mean, it's pretty easy for my... I mean, my number two is a Velociraptor.
No, so is mine! I know what your number one is. It's T-Rex.
Yeah, of course.
You think T-Rex had a good life, though?
I mean, I was actually, when I was writing down this list, I was thinking, like, so T-Rex, you know, they were vicious, and they could run fast, and obviously, you know, they were predators, but I mean, didn't their little arms, like, not help them out at all?
I feel like T-Rex had a difficult life. I feel like if dinosaurs were a lot like us, like, T-Rex was kind of the big scary guy that was just really misunderstood.
Until you, like, let your guard down, then he fucking ate you.
But that's not his fault. He's just being T-Rex. I feel like T-Rex had a hard life.
Are you putting a personality now to a T-Rex?
Yeah, basically. He's misunderstood.
Okay. All right. Are there any, like, honorable mention dinosaurs?
I honestly don't know any other ones. Maybe
Yes, you do.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I know names, but I couldn't actually picture it. Like, Diplodon, Aceratrex,
Now you're just making shit up. What was the last one?
Plesiosaur. Plesiosaur's a good one. That's the underwater one with the big fins.
Oh, nice. Or if you're a Pokemon fan, Lapras. No, no backup you do. Okay, got it. Okay, well, whatever.
Do you believe that Pokemon were real? There's thousands, there's millions of Pokemon. So are those real?
You know, Nick, to be honest with you, I'm going to have to say no on that one.
Have you ever seen the thing that says the Flat Earth Society has members all around the globe?
Of course. I'm no joke. I'm pretty sure I did an interview with somebody from the Flat Earth Society.
So now that you've heard the idiot's opinions, let's go back to the professional. Let's bring Levi back in and hear what he thinks the top five best dinosaurs are. And he couldn't really go into a lot of detail about this just because of the way research and press releases and all that kind of stuff works. But if you listen close, you'll hear him talk about something that I was just amazed by, a new dinosaur. Okay, here's the hard questions.
Okay.
Top five best dinosaurs.
Oh, man. Archaeopteryx is number one. Tyrannosaurus, just, you know, it's iconic. It's cool. Big head, big teeth. Gotta love that. Oh, man. After that, Velociraptor. Both the Jurassic Park and the real one, because they're both terrifying. Allosaurus is a really cool. We found a few of those on our property, so they really need to, you know, I've got some personal time invested in Allosaurus.
Is that the water one, or is that the...
It's like a miniature version of the T-Rex. Like, he'd be two legs, a smaller head, longer arms, more digits. Let's go with Triceratops. It's the state dinosaur of Wyoming, so...
What, if you had to pick one that's like a sleeper, what's the one that you really like that people don't know about?
Call me again in 5 months and I'll tell you.
Did you guys
find... We got one that we're working on right now. It's brand new, and when it comes out, that's going to be way up on my list.
So you guys found, like, a brand new dinosaur?
Yeah, and it's currently in research right now. They're writing up a description of it. And when that's all published and released, it's going to move up my list, because it's a neat little dinosaur.
That's amazing, though. To find that.
We'll have to do a follow-up when it comes out.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, how did you guys, and I know you probably can't say much about it, but, like, how did you realize, oh, we don't know what this is?
You know, next time we'll have to bring the researcher on. I'm not as privy to that. It was found originally in 1995. And just kind of sat in a box for a while until we realized that, hey, something about this isn't right.
I guess that's true. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily – it's got to be very difficult to piece them together in the sense that you're just – you're kind of in some ways an educated guess all the time.
Now it is time for the tip of the week. John Shull is here with the tip of the week. His ideas are so big you can only handle the tip. So here he is with just the tip of the week.
Do you have a tip of the week or did you forget about it?
No, I have a great tip of the week, and actually it's not even about me this week.
Ooh, a tip of the week that someone else had a life lesson.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they have a life lesson, but they should have life lessons. So, and you're going to know exactly where I'm going as soon as I start this, but Floyd Mayweather, famous boxer from Saginaw, Michigan. Guy's made, I looked it up, he's made over $400 fighting, or boxing rather, alone. Like throughout the last 15 years, $400 million just in contracts. It's not even revenue, whatever else they sign. I don't know. You're kind of a boxing fan, right?
Yeah.
He comes out this week, or comes out, I actually think it came out last week, and it said that he was going broke. He needs to find fights. How in the absolute fuck do you make hundreds of millions of dollars and you don't have one person around you that's like, well, you're making $30 million from this fight. Maybe you should just put that away for a rainy day.
It boggles the mind, but there's this great documentary, Broke, that ESPN or somebody did a number of years ago that shows that this is incredibly common, that a lot of these famous athletes end up growing broke.
But the question always comes down to, at least with people that I talk to about this, who are not experts by any mean, but the one thing that always gets brought up is the education. You know, the person, you know, doesn't have the support system, they didn't grow up knowing how to handle money. But then, like, one of the arguments that makes sense to me about that is, what, 1% of the world grows up with all this money, right, that they don't ever have to know what to do with anything else. Most of us grow up from the bottom up. So I mean, I find a hard time finding that as a reasonable excuse.
And I found this to be true in my own personal life as well. They've actually done studies that shows that whatever percentage amount of money that you save, whether that's 5%, 10%, whatever, you will continue to do that no matter how much money that you make. So if you spend all your money, it doesn't matter how much money you have, you're going to spend it all. If you're a saver, you will always be a saver. And I think that basically applies across the board.
I just don't get it. Like you gamble away $100 million in a year? Are you Jesus? Like, my mind is blown.
To me, math is one of the most powerful forces in the universe, and I think that people underestimate it. Like, you don't realize that spending $50,000 a day, even when you have $400 million, that $400 million ends up going away pretty quick. Like, math adds up. You remember we had that professional sports gambler on a couple of episodes, and he's like, you just start chasing it. You start chasing it.
I don't know, but that can be a super slippery slope, it seems. And it just, you know, I read an article in one of the national publications about Money Mayweather that, you know, that kind of that thought process of what, you know, of what you just mentioned, you know, like, Mayweather, he's done boxing, right? Like, he goes back to his mansions and, like, there's nothing there to fulfill him except gambling, where he may win, he may lose. You know, he's chasing the excitement.
I think that's all. I've always been fascinated by that in sports people, that basically all of your life is front-loaded. You make all of your money at the front end, you get all of your glory at the front end, and then everything else is essentially just downhill from there. So basically, is your tip of the week, don't blow $400 million?
Yeah, to bring it full circle, that would be a great tip. Don't blow $400 million gambling. At least do it on hookers and cocaine.
Another brilliant tip from the legendary John Shull. Let's move into our second, our stupider top five, which is top five cars that just make you generally suspicious of the person or that people shouldn't basically be driving. This isn't in any particular order. I'll start it off. Mazda Miata.
I mean, anything that is made fun of in a movie is an ultimate, like, no-no for me. I'm going to go the big white Astro vans.
Oh, yeah.
You see anybody strolling, any male, Caucasian male, strolling down the street in one of those things, you immediately think stranger danger.
Yeah. I'm going to go with a beaver whacker, the beaver whacker car.
I don't even know what a beaver whacker car looks like or is.
This must be a Midwest thing, because I told somebody else the beaver whacker and nobody knew what it was.
Can you explain it accurately?
The beaver whacker is the station wagon with the wood paneling on it.
Oh, okay, like the National Lampoon's family vehicle.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. I kind of generalized this, but I said any small sedan that can't fit a human being that weighs over 200 pounds.
You're going like your average Fiat?
Yeah, Fiat, Ford Fiestas, Dodge Avenger, Dodge Prowler back when they made those.
Oh, God, that was a terrible car. I didn't trust anybody in a Dodge Prowler.
Yeah, well, there's probably a reason why they don't make them anymore.
I'm going to go with, similar to the Dodge Prowler in my mind, is the PT Cruiser.
The PT Cruiser. Man, those are death traps. I don't think those have ever done very well on the safety ratings.
Probably on purpose, because they figured anybody who bought this thing should just really go ahead and go out.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because well, that is a perfect segue into my next one, which are smart cars.
Oh, the little tiny, tiny things.
The ones that don't even register on the safety list, because if you get hit by a strong gust of wind, it will fly you off into a ditch.
This is one of those things, every time I've seen one, I've been like, man, I bet that's great gas mileage. Boy, I don't want to drive one of those things.
Yeah, I don't care if they get 2,000 miles per gallon. You're not getting my fat ass in one of those things, ever.
Why wouldn't you just go motorcycle? It's just basically the same thing.
I don't know. I don't know how that compares, but
good gas mileage, generally cheap, can't carry shit.
You don't even have a motorcycle. You have like a modified dirt bike.
Don't, the Black Bat. Don't ever insult the Black Bat like that. That is an original motorcycle. That is a standard basic motorcycle. She doesn't start right now, but she's 12 years going strong.
Well, you know what? There's something to be said about vintage anything.
I'm going to go with any soft top convertible. Don't buy a soft top. Just don't do it.
So actually, you know, I'm glad you said that, because here in the Midwest, or I don't know, I guess I'll just say Michigan, there's a stigma against those cars, right? Because you can drive them for 2 or 3 months, maybe. Well, really, maybe 4 or 5 months. But then the rest of the year, they're worse shit.
No, a soft top is a stupid decision. You're basically saying I'm an idiot. What about those cube ones that are shaped like a cube?
Oh man. So when you say vehicle, I kind of expanded it, and I said any person on a moped, unless you're dumb and dumbering it with someone on the back seat clenched to you, and it has to be a man or a man or a woman on woman.
Well, yeah, you can't have two opposite sexes on a moped. I think that's pretty understood. You can't do it. You can't do it.
It's not romantic. If there's any young college kids out there listening to this, just don't do it.
I've always understood that basically owning a moped means you have a DUI.
No, because you still have to have a license to drive a moped, right?
Not necessarily. If it's under a certain amount of CCs, I don't think it's even considered like a anything. You can just, I've always been like, oh, that guy got a DUI.
I usually don't say that, but now I'll start looking more intently, I suppose.
I will say one of the most terrifying experiences of my young life was when me and two other friends accidentally rode rented mopeds onto the highway in Miami and basically almost died instantly.
Dude, Miami's a crazy place in general on the highways. And you assholes are on mopeds?
Well, we lived our lives up in Kansas up until that point and never experienced a big city and didn't understand the way that interstates worked. and ended up on like I-4 or something, or I-5 or what, I-1 or whatever, and thought, oh yeah. Dear God, we've got to get off of this. Do you have any other ones? The one that always also stands out to me big time is basically the Chomo van.
Is that like the hipster van?
Yeah, but it's not all hippied up. It's basically, you know, like, oh, that person is about to kidnap someone. All right, that's starting to wind down. So let's go ahead and wind down this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you guys so much for listening. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. It really helps us out, and we really appreciate it. I also really want to thank Levi Schenkel for joining us. If you want to get in touch with him, we have links to all of his social media, as well as the Wyoming Dinosaur Center on our social media. It's Profoundly Pointless on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well. Coming up on the next episode, we're either going to talk to a guy who lives in Antarctica, an independent wrestler, or somebody who basically makes their living off of Twitch. And if you don't know what Twitch is, essentially you just let people watch you live your everyday life, so far as the way that I understand it. So we'll see which one of those we were able to get done first is essentially the way that this is going to work. I want to remind everybody that we have switched our podcast hosting site over to Podbean. I don't really know what that means. But again, I feel like I should continue to mention it just because that's what they told me to do. If you have any comments to the show, it's really easy on that website if you're listening through it through Podbean to just make any comments. We'd love to hear from you guys. We're still working on figuring out how we're going to incorporate more listeners into the audience, into the show. So hopefully we can get that done next time. And we're also still working on making a better ending.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.